Hi, everybody. Welcome to No Story is Sacred. If you've never listened before, basically, we're four siblings who grew up talking about the art of storytelling. Now that we're adults, we're still talking about it, and we're inviting you to join the conversation. I'm Alex, and I'm guided by a force much greater than luck. I heard someone mutter under their breath, "Whose did I take?"
I just remembered that I need to think of something, but I'm going last, so it's fine.
Oh, all right. I'm Kat, and shock me, shock me, shock me with that deviant behavior.
I'm Brendan, and I live every day as if it's Rex Manning Day.
Nice.
Yeah, okay, that was on the level of what I was going to do. And I'm Pippin, and I don't feel the need to explain my art to you, Warren.
Today, we're talking about the 1995 film Empire Records, so spoilers abound. If you want specific content warnings about things we may talk about, check out the show notes on nostorysacred.com. For those of you who haven't seen Empire Records, the summary from Google is, Joe runs Empire Records, an independent Delaware store that employs a tight-knit group of music-savvy youths. Hearing that the shop...
Youths.
I'm sorry. I just see the word use and I automatically go use.
Like, that's all. Sorry, go on.
That's what I was going for.
I didn't do this. This wasn't my fault.
Continue. Whatever, I'm charming.
Hearing that the shop may be sold to a big chain, slacker employee Lucas bets a chunk of the store's money, hoping to get a big return. When this plan fails, Empire Records falls into serious trouble, and the various other clerks, including Lovely Corey and Gloomy Deb, must deal with the problem among many other issues.
All the issues.
Really.
So many issues.
And that's a weird way to end that on, like Lovely Corey and Gloomy Deb.
To be fair, I think what was going on is they want to, because I took out the actor names from the summary. I took the actor names out of the summary because I felt that it broke up the summary too much and it wasn't important information.
You don't need to know that shit.
No, but I feel like maybe they wanted to mention at least Corey because she's played by Liv Tyler.
Yeah, and she's on the cover of like the poster or whatever of the box. I'm dating myself here, the box, the VHS box. Even though she is a periphery peripheral
an character. Ensemble character, really?
Yes. But she's not Lucas and she's not Joe. So
I mean, they're all
And she's not Rex Manning.
her story arc is pretty much the second biggest, you know, next to Joe's and Lucas's.
So
it's the romance, I guess,
and the drugs.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
So a lot of stuff kind of is going on this little storyline that we're following here.
It's 24 hours in the day of a weird store.
Which, do you mind if I kind of bring up a little discussion point?
Sure.
So one of the things that was brought up in improv class was the concept of today is the day. So if you're trying to create a scene, say writing or a one scene sketch or something like that, the audience is essentially watching the most important day in whoever's on the stage's life, right?
Right.
Because that's interesting.
That's story, yeah.
It's legit. The point of change.
And of course it's the most important day. It's Rex Manning Day.
We can't be upset today. It's Rex Manning Day.
So we have an ensemble of characters here, and the thing I can appreciate for the story as a whole is that for pretty much everybody in the cast, with a couple of exceptions, it is the most important day of their lives, more or less.
What I love is how, like, all of the cast, like, look at Lucas and they're like, what's with you today?
What did you
You're
do?
You're different.
It's like the inversion of a character. We're trying to figure out who he was before this day before he fucked up everything. And we can only do it based on all the other characters' reactions to him.
Well, it's almost like Lucas himself. Lucas is the character who kind of kicks off a lot of the events in the story by betting all the money in the safe on a craps table and loses it all because he assumed that he was a character in a story. And of course, he'd win all the money and be the hero. And that ain't how the world works, kid.
It was $9,000. He doubled that and then he let it ride.
Never let it ride. Never.
He assumed he was the main, like a hero of a story and the main character of a story. And he didn't realize that he was at the beginning of the story. He thought he was at the action adventure climax.
He was actually at the end of what was supposed to be the end of Joe's. And then he stole it.
He fucked it up.
Very good point. If Joe had taken the money, he would have gotten it. Because he wouldn't have let it ride.
I feel like all of this is Joe's fault. Because I think everyone knew better than to trust Lucas to close the store.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, one thing that I think also we see with Lucas is... Yeah, he's clearly not the main character in a heroic story of saving the store at the very beginning, but I think he is kind of undergoing a almost like a Nietzschean character revelation. You know, he hit his lowest point right there at the beginning.
Oh, yes, he did.
Oh, yeah.
And for the rest of the story, except I think when he kind of has like a little heart to heart with everybody, he kind of becomes this philosopher.
Yep.
Because really, in order to truly attain enlightenment, you have to reach to your lowest point.
Well, and I mean, that's part of what makes this movie, I think, so great and quotable. It's got tons of problems, but on the other hand, you have, you know, Lucas on the other side just showing up behind you and whispering something dark and meaningful that makes no sense.
What's with today?
And everyone looking at me like, what the shit are you talking about?
Come on, man.
Which is what makes it funny.
Yeah, and he breaks the fourth wall.
He does. He does break the fourth wall.
Also,
he has that power.
He's not the one who even saves the Empire at the end.
No! No!
It's Mark! Mark with a K.
Is it Mark or is it Gina? No, Mark comes up with the idea. Okay, wait. We're mentioning all these names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should maybe say who they are.
And what their character arc is.
Yes, to make it vaguely like we're talking about story and not just gossiping about an awesome movie.
It's a great movie, to be fair. If you haven't seen it, you totally should.
Debatable. I'll
wow.
Say
Whoa.
Ooh.
Oh.
So,
dissension in the ranks.
Right. So we've pretty much talked about Lucas. Next
one. Yeah. Lucas was adopted? Fostered?
He was.
I am unsure of their relationship.
Is somehow living with the owner of the Empire Records, Joe, without it being weird.
Do they live together?
I thought they did.
I don't think they, like, I'm pretty certain that Lucas, at least, is, you know, is technically an adult.
I think they're most, at most a mentorship thing.
Yeah, like, what we do know is that Joe took Lucas out of a shitty situation.
Okay, that's true. So I automatically assumed that, like, that meant that Lucas was, like, living with him because he took him out of a shitty situation. But who knows? Maybe he allowed him to get his own place by offering him a job or something.
Who knows? He's one of this cast of misfits.
We don't actually get the full story for these characters, which I like.
It's a slice of life.
Yeah.
Of a really weird day.
Of a weird day.
But what do you expect from Rex Manning Day?
Okay, so there's...
So we have Lucas.
Yep. We have Joe, who is the manager, I'm sorry, not the owner of Empire Records. Empire Records is a part of a larger chain.
No, it's independent.
What?
It's an independent.
My God, I'm going to shut up. Okay, you guys talk.
So spoiler alert, Kat did not rewatch the movie?
First of all, no, I didn't.
Yeah.
Because I have a conscientious objection.
We'll get to that.
But that's why she's screwing it up. So... It's an independent store owned by someone else who wants to sell it to a chain.
Okay,
who wants more money?
That's what I meant.
Money.
And they have to start wearing orange aprons and
no visible tattoos,
no short skirts.
No, yep. like Music Town, not knowing their target audience.
I think it was also supposed to be a jab against Tower Records.
Probably.
Oh, yes. Mm. Oh, yes.
Yeah, so that's Joe. We've mentioned Corey, who is a straight-A, high-achieving, going to Harvard young woman.
Perfect. Get perfect woman.
She's perfect, and she is determined to have sex with Rex Manning.
Yes, Rex Manning. Because why wouldn't you?
Rex Manning is...
Money Moore.
is a, I'm going to say has-been, music star.
Former 80s pop idol, according to Wikipedia.
who has recently gotten an unflattering haircut, wears a shiny shirt. To be fair, that is a plot point.
it is.
and, you know, is touring around... Because he's got a new song out, and only older women, listen to it because they want to relive those days.
And Corey.
Women of a certain generation.
Yeah.
The song 1985, it comes to mind.
Yeah, fair enough. So that's Rex Manning. There is his manager whose name I don't remember.
Jane.
And she's his manager and recognizes that he's an asshole because he's also an asshole. There is. AJ.
A sensitive artist boy who is dense as fuck.
And madly in love.
Madly!
He is madly in love with Corey and is going to tell her by noon today.
1:47.
By 1:47 today. By the closing time at the latest.
But it's happening today.
It's happening today.
No day like today.
On Rex Manning Day.
Yeah, on of Rex course. Manning Day.
Where, the day when she is convinced that she's gonna fuck Rex Manning.
He does not know this.
Shakespearean.
He also at one point glues the quarters down on the floor because that's
quarters that have been dropped there. There weren't just random quarters on the floor.
Yeah, there were quarters that Lucas brought back from Atlantic City.
And then he glues them down.
And then he glues them down. And it is art. There is Mark, who is into grunge metal. And it's generally just...
And mugging at the camera.
Mugging at the camera, yeah.
And Gwar, which is a real band. And they had to not show some of the NC-17 portions of their performance because this film is not NC-17, but Gwar definitely is.
He's just generally a chipper happy guy who's into some hardcore stuff. There is Gina, who is played by Renee Zellweger.
Yes, she is.
Corey's bestie?
She's Corey's best friend. She wears very short skirts, and she does have sex with Rex Mann.
Good job, team, because she is not living the perfect life, and there may be some unresolved jealousy issues there.
Possibly. A little bit.
Her arch nemesis is...
Herself.
Yeah, oh, wow.
Ha-ha.
I don't know what you were going for, but I'm right.
Deb. I was going with Deb.
Deb's kind of Corey's arch nemesis.
Deb's everyone's arch nemesis.
Deb is the goth girl who tried to kill herself last night. That's weirdly glossed over more than it probably should be.
It's not glossed over. They have a funeral. They have an entire funeral.
It's weird.
Okay, but more importantly, we never see her face before she shaves her head in the bathroom that morning.
True, she goes into the bathroom with hair, she leaves without it.
And leaves as Robin Tunney, who you may remember from The Craft and other better films and television shows.
I'm not sure why you're dissing this movie. This is an amazing movie.
Oh no, I was dissing The Craft.
Oh, The Craft. Okay, that's fair.
I love The Craft.
Also a great movie, but not...
not what you call high art.
Yeah.
Great, not for the reasons you think, but moving on.
But yeah, so that's Deb. She's the one with the visible tattoos. So that's Deb. There is Deb's
boyfriend.
Boyfriend, whose name I also don't remember.
Burko.
Played by Coyote Shivers.
Yeah, who really provides nothing but I'm sorry for what I did, which Deb replies, it's not about you.
Which is a very valid point, and I think that needs to be heard more in society.
Anyway. There's also the guy who works at the pizza place. He has no relevance to anything. And then,
he gets Mark high.
That's true.
He comes with drugs for Mark.
And there is also Warren.
Warren!
Warren!
Who is an underage shoplifter.
Who all the employees sort of just sort of adopt. Even after he comes back with a gun.
I got the distinct impression that that's pretty much how anybody who worked in that store got hired.
Yeah. That's why he went back with a gun. That's how you get a job there.
Well, what's great is that they're like, what's your name? He's like, it's Warren Beatty. And they're like, fine. And then later when they're like, Warren, why are you doing this? Warren, why'd you bring a gun? Warren's okay. He's like, my name's not fucking Warren! And they're
like, his name's not Warren.
His name's not Warren?
I thought his name was Warren.
Like, that's the Warren? Shocking moment.
Such a great movie.
It is. I love it so much.
And I think I think there is just a jerk boss, but he's jerk boss.
We mentioned him.
Miller.
I think that's it.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
It. Yeah. And we've covered most of the plot. So.
So Kat.
Yeah.
This came out in 1995.
It did.
You were a teenager in 1995.
I was. I recognize all that clothing.
Which is pretty much why we decided to bring up this movie in the first place, right? It's kind of like the 90s encapsulated, right?
Well, 1995 is an amazing year for movies. If you look back on it, there's some great stuff. Yeah, it is very quintessentially 90s. It's got the clothing, it's got the attitude.
That 1995 life.
Yeah. Anyway, 1995. So it makes perfect sense to me that, yeah, of course you glue quarters down and then you save Empire Records. Obviously. But I actually did not see it for the first time until I was in college. So at least 2000. I was a freshman.
So a few years.
Few years had passed. And I'm like, what is this? And I was gently taken by the hand. It's like, prepare to have your life changed. And they were right. They were right.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, I never really, got really into this movie when I was young or anything like that. So I just kind of watch it nowadays. I'm like, yep, that's 90s.
Man, I love this movie.
Well, here's the thing. Pip and Al, did I like introduce it to you like forcibly? I don't remember.
Yeah. I don't remember how forcibly it was, but knowing us, it's probably by force. Yeah.
It was probably pretty forcibly.
Yeah.
But was it me who did it or did you come to it on your own?
I think it was you.
You.
It sounds like me.
You brought the cassette back.
That's right. I did buy it. Oh, man.
Speaking of cassettes.
Yeah.
Why didn't you watch it again?
That's
okay.
That's what I've been wondering this entire goddamn time.
Okay.
The mystery is finally revealed.
Here's the fucking deal. VHS, the original VHS, was the original cut from the movie theaters. Mm-hmm. There were several points that made no sense, but that's fine. Like, why did Joe and Jane, the assistant or the manager, suddenly get together at the end? Who knows? Who fucking cares? They're not the point of the story. Okay. When the DVD came out, and all subsequent showings of this film, that came out with the, not even a director's cut, it was like longer extended or whatever, there was no way to access the original theatrical cut.
What did they add?
They added a couple of scenes like between Joe and Jane, and they lengthened the beginning in particular, it's one of the few places that doesn't need more.
Do you happen to know how?
As I recall, Lucas talks more. There's more of an issue with him running around. There's a bigger discussion as to the meaning behind, why he's been left there, I think. I don't know. The point is, it was stupid. It slowed it down right at the beginning and added nothing.
I'm not sure that the Netflix version is the extended version.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I'm not remembering any of these scenes you're talking about.
Because it's basically Lucas closes, goes to Atlantic City, encounters AJ and
I have to
Mark.
Say, if that's the case, and that is entirely because of fan outcry, everybody fucking hated the extended version and the fact that you couldn't get the original theatrical release. Also, people are I believe it still has not been a release of the official soundtrack. So
which is
back,
a shame, because that's some
back
great music.
In the yeah. day, you had to Napster the complete soundtrack, because people like put it together based on what they knew of the music, and then made like their own unofficial playlist. So you would like download it like that, and like with like a shitty recording of Gina at the end singing with Coyote Shivers.
AJ! AJ!
That, like in the middle of the song.
Hi! Yeah, I still have that.
Yeah.
I still have it. That's when people were fans, man.
Dork.
Wow. Anyway.
Like, that song introduced me to Video Killed the Radio Star.
Because it's a great song.
Yeah.
The soundtrack for that film is amazing.
And what killed the radio star for me was the fact that we had a computer in my grad school that with one touch of a touchscreen, you can get that playing instantly. And every single time somebody walked down the hall, they hit that button.
But
it was like a Hall of Fame thing.
But did they put one, it's not unusual, in the middle?
Ah.
But yeah. So my point is, you should go watch the Netflix version, because you've been depriving yourself for no good reason.
Ever fucking dently.
Like, wow.
Wow. Oh my god. I bought this thing on VHS, I bought it on DVD, and then I threw my DVD down a well, because it was garbage.
Fair enough.
You know, I do hear in the Blu-ray version, they added, like, a lot of CGI creatures into the mix.
For some reason, like, Jabba the Hutt is actually walking. It's so strange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Miller's actually a Hutt.
Makes sense. I was thinking maybe he was a Gungan. So just to sort of round out the movie at the end.
Oh, yeah. Mention that part.
Everyone's had their own days.
An emotional day for everyone involved.
Corey, I think, did tell AJ... AJ told Corey, other way around, that he loved her, but only after Gina fucked Rex Manning.
No. He did it in the worst possible fucking way. Impossible. Like, Corey, glad you're here. Visibly upset, on the roof, clearly wanting to be alone. I have to tell you that I love you.
After she tried to fuck Rex Manning and... backed out because Rex Manning was a dick about it.
Yep.
Kind of a sleaze.
Yeah, well, he was treating it like what it was, which was, you know, a teeny bopper wanting to fuck a star. She was being
casual
a star
encounter.
Fucker. But for her, she was like, I've had this passionate, meaningful relationship with your music, which is different from the person.
Yeah.
And then when it wasn't passionate and meaningful, she's like, oh shit, maybe I've made a mistake.
Yeah.
I've made a terrible mistake.
As a matter of fact.
Insert the gif right here.
Hello, darkness, my old. Anyways.
So that happened, and Gina fucked Rex Manning, and everybody found out about it, and Corey felt betrayed, because Gina knew the whole situation, but then, mm-hmm. Corey sort of...
Gina was doing that to get back at Corey for, slut shaming.
Yeah, true.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Which is the best reason to go anyway.
Oh, yeah.
And then then Gina told everyone that Corey was hooked on speed.
Yep.
And that's how she's perfect.
And that's when she started singing I'm So Excited over and over again until Zach Morris stopped her.
Yep. Yep.
That happened. Yeah.
That's the story.
So that happened. There was a fake funeral for Deb.
Yep.
To show how we all really care about her. Rex Manning Day happened. Jane quit her job.
Yep.
Warren tried to shoplift, got taken to the jail, came back with a gun, got taken away again, but was promised a job when he came back.
And he came back.
He did come back.
And everyone actually found out about the store being sold because Lucas was an idiot. And they're all like, well, shit, what are we going to do now?
And then Mark...
And then there were reporters outside the door because Warren came by with that gun.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark went outside to, went to the press and went, hey, I work here. I saw everything. And they're like, great. Tell us what happened. He's like, oh yeah, a kid with a gun. But listen, we're having a party here tonight.
To fundraise.
To fundraise yeah. to Save Empire Records.
Damn the man. Damn the save the Empire.
There you go. Oh my god, I gotta make that t-shirt, man.
which is still one of my favorite phrases that I say all the time.
This movie is intensely quotable.
So they have the party, they auction stuff off, they sell stuff.
Gina finds her self-worth.
It's true. There's live music on the roof. Gina has a solo. She finds self-worth. And Joe takes the money, buys the store. It's as quick as that. And everyone has a dance party on the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the name of the owner?
Miller.
Brendan's been telling us this entire time. And we're all like, whatever.
And then also to put a button on the end, Corey reciprocates AJ's feelings.
And then they kiss while dancing on the roof.
Oh.
And then there's a weird dance number at the end because it's the 90s.
Okay, it's not a coordinated dance. That makes it sound like they all start doing like the cha-cha or something like that. No, it's one of those things where
it's not a Bollywood
like,
number.
It's like one of those things where like, you know, Sixpence None the Richer starts playing. I'm pulling out my 1995 references. And then they all have their own little private dance parties, but those two are dancing together.
You ever hear about the Walk of Life project?
No. Are you going to sell us something?
It's a theory that – not even theory. It's just a kind of a meme thing where you can end every movie with the song Walk of Life and it's improved.
What is and Walk of Life?
It's that song that goes da da. Da, 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 da.
Oh, that one!
Da, 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 da. I might not, it wouldn't have fit, but I might not have minded if there was a coordinated dance. Because I'm a sucker.
Well, there was that weird dance party in the mill. Well, to say no more. Money more.
Say no more. Money more. Which is Rex Manning's big new hit.
To be fair, they are deliberately making fun of the song and the choreography because they've all seen the music video associated.
Yeah.
So it makes sense in context.
One of the things I love about this movie is like the little, the bridge in the middle, where we see presumably what a day in the life is like at the store when it's not the most important day. It's like less than 2 minutes, I think, but you see, the song is My Boyfriend's Back or something like that, but it's like a bluesy cover. And, you know, you just see them kind of puttering around the store and you see the customers enjoying themselves as well. And it's a nice moment that helps offset the absolute bizarreness of the rest of the day.
Yeah. A woman listening to music while doing ballet.
Yeah, she's practicing ballet to see whether or not it goes with the music. I mean, it's awesome.
There's a couple in the listening room going at it.
Makes sense.
That's probably why we don't have listening rooms anymore.
Yeah, seriously.
That gets tied off by Joe knocking on the door and wagging his finger at them.
Yeah, it's like
Joe is my kindred spirit in this film.
Joe's awesome.
I kind of feel like, you know, he has responsibility, but you can also tell he clearly cares.
Oh yeah, he cares. Like,
yeah.
Like, his world just kind of fell apart that morning. And
yeah.
First he's mad, but you know what he does? He asks Lucas, are you in trouble?
Yeah, he figured Lucas had to have a reason.
Lucas didn't, but...
No, Lucas did. Okay, to be fair, Lucas did.
He did. It was a stupid fucking reason.
But he's like, are you in trouble? Did you need the money?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like for a certain extent, you know, like I also feel for, like, was it Benny in Rent? It's like, yeah, responsibility. Woo! Maybe that's a stay tuned there.
Rent. Oh, oof. God. Oof. Pippin, of course, is like fucking delighted over there. Fuck off. You're kicking your little heels, I can tell.
Listen, I would have a great time.
Well, I cried silently in the corner. Fine. If we do Rent, we have to do Hamilton too.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, fair.
Okay. Damn it!
I mean, the entire episode would just be as crying the orphanage.
Oh, God. You were so fucking
evil,
Pip.
We keep on wanting to jump ahead in the show format. We're like, no. Wait for it.
Oh, my God.
Right.
Worth it right there.
Jesus.
I think we're getting close to
a little track. Off, to- off track.
Do we need to talk about our story changes?
What?
Yes, we do.
Yeah,
yes,
I think we basically talked about the story and the context of the story.
Yeah, good job, yeah, us. Anyway, story changes, because I think we did cover everything.
We covered a lot. We covered a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, basically all that's left of the movie is quotes.
Oh, I do want to say that I think the reason I like coffee shop AUs so much and why I like this movie so much is because they tend to be sort of slice of lifey with a major thing happening.
Yes.
And this movie reminds me of why I like this kind of AUs.
Aww.
But yes, now we can go on to story changes. And I can go first if other people need time to think or something.
I have an idea on hand if needed.
Who wants to go first?
Fight.
I can go first as the resident, you know, not like Empire Records super fan.
This feels very, very like shade is being cast here, but go on.
No, again, it's not a bad movie, you know, I'm going to put that out there.
It's an amazing movie.
They're amazing.
It's corny.
It's right up there with the spirit of Christmas. That's what it is.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of cheesy. That's what I'm kind of getting at. Not high cinema. I guess what came to mind as I was watching it, aside from miniature structural changes, which are just like the asides and all that are kind of obnoxious to me in this post-Family Guy day and age. Where
that
I'm like,
wasn't post-Family Guy. Family Guy hadn't happened
yes,
yet.
Yes.
But him having...
Okay. Yeah.
So, to me, the non-sequitur stuff just feels like it's a distraction from the story development, the character development that I'm actually more invested in. It's like, okay, yeah, this is padding it out a little bit. Whatever. They're quirky. Huzzah. But anyway, so I kind of just thought about how I would make it today, which is a challenge, I would say, because record stores aren't as common nowadays. Go figure.
We have to have another gimmick.
Yes, and that's where I come in.
Okay, I will point out, though, not necessarily. There's, like, literally three record stores in Worcester.
Yeah, but they're niche nowadays, yeah, as opposed to
ubiquitous
fixtures.
That's where you get your music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
There nowadays there are places of music discovery, and maybe that could be one of you guys' focus. My focus is I'm just kind of wondering about a slice of life story about, say, like a board game cafe, because you can get all sorts of basically the entire gamut of American life as far as people who play a game together.
Are you?
And I'm just kind of thinking you get the entire assorted cast of players, staff members, all that stuff, all in one place.
Are you talking about Empire Records' sister location, Empire or Tabletops?
Kinda, yeah, yeah. Empires
Empire
of Catan.
Dice.
I don't know. Empire Dice. Ooh,
nice. I like Empires of Catan, but I think that's
that's
a little too
awful close to.
Yeah, you don't want to.
I like Empire Dice though.
Empire Dice. Okay. And kind of follow a similar structure there, you know. I have to imagine that much like an independent record store back in the 90s, a independent board game slash bookstore slash cafe or whatever probably has razor tight margins.
Mm-hmm. Actually, there's a place like that again where I live, and I can definitely imagine everybody in Empire Records working there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I think what I'd also play with is like maybe the Lucas character actually maybe having needed the money for something. I don't know what, but, you know, I don't know. That was just a thought off the top of my head because they're not having to buy themselves out. So I have to address that right off the bat. So I can be open for ideas on that.
So what sort of differences would there be? Like, who's the Rex Manning of a tabletop gaming thing?
Will Wheaton.
I didn't want to say it.
Oh.
Not today. Not on Will Wheaton,
Day. Okay. Oh.
Or a fake Gygax. Like, say, Fogax.
Yeah.
Fogax.
Gary Fogax. Larry Fogax.
Nope.
Like, someone who designed a D&D clone.
Yes. Yeah.
But that's the thing, like, because we have a wide selection of people who play games nowadays, a lot of customers in the store probably don't even know who this guy is. You just kind of have what an actual, like, book signing event tends to be, which is just, here's the table.
Unlike serial killer profiling.
Writing is a lonely business. God.
Well, sorry, the one and only good episode from Millennium.
Yeah, because you guys have all been to a book signing in a bookstore before, right?
We've all been shills at book signings.
Yeah.
And readings and anything else.
Oh my God. At panels. We've done everything.
Oh, yeah.
Workshops. Yes. Workshops.
Because
we have dutiful. No shame.
No shame. Sense of duty. Whatever. Lo combe.
And maybe we can have that character kind of spout out the writer witticisms and all that. Just kind of, cause you have to have like our own personal experiences, thrown in there to throw shade on everything there too.
So you want a Jose Chung, basically.
Probably.
Yeah. Who is, of course, the writer's writer from The X-Files and Millennium. Thank you.
But I think the big takeaway I'd want is, hey, when everybody's around the table together, we're all together, and it's an excuse to be cooperative and have a good time.
Family is what you make it.
Your found family.
Found family.
Oh, yeah. We never actually said that's what this movie is, isn't it?
That's what this movie is. It's very, very American in that way. Mm-hmm. Other countries don't do found family as much.
Found families plot are great.
I know, but it's just not a thing. I think because America is so fucking huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It pulls away from the, your cousin's next door, your sister's upstairs, et cetera, and so forth. No, your sister might be in fucking Texas.
I feel called out.
And so maybe I need to make my own family over here now with my cat.
So I guess my question to kind of round out just my thought here about my little story mm-hmm. change, what would Lucas do as the inciting incident?
Because
I'm feeling like it's not being bought out or anything like that. It's just, I'm not quite sure.
Okay, so what about, you know how there's like magic, there's still Magic the Gathering tournaments and they still do like
of course. Those
box openings? Do you mm-hmm. remember those?
Mm-hmm.
What if he does something like take the entire collection of boxes or whatever they had for like the tournament or something that was happening like the next day uh-huh. and opens them so that he can find like the good card. The good card to sell to save the empire.
To ensure that they're in the black for ages to come.
Except that's fucking stupid because there is no good card. Or at least it wouldn't. Nothing he finds will actually add up to the amount of punters buying these boxes.
Yeah,
yeah.
So he's ruined, and he's ruined the event.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, so the event got canceled on Larry Fogack's day.
Larry Fogack's day,
not today.
Which is
today.
Who was and that was going to bring in customers to be, quote-unquote, an audience for Larry Gygax, who maybe he had, like, a writer in his contract saying, you know, if I don't get 20 people or whatever, then you have to refund, like, I get to keep the...
You pay my travel?
Yeah, like, some bullshit thing, because when you're pseudo-famous, you do bullshit things to try to feel important.
Yeah.
You know, Board Game Shop also tend to have on display the expensive collector item. Like the unopened like 1973 edition of this tabletop game, the one that had a printing error.
I just had a thought.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of goes a bit more into natural disaster almost, but say a little smoking happens as he's closing up for the first time and trips the fire alarm. And jet of water all over the priceless collectible.
Oh God.
Oh no.
What if, oh my God, what if like it just drowns the fucking place?
Oh. Mm. Oh no.
What if
What if they had extra stocking because they were going to go have a booth at a convention?
For Larry Gygax Day.
Oh, no. I legit put my hand to my chest.
And that is why he empties the till and goes to Atlantic City. Gotta replenish the stock.
Which only compounds the problem.
Yep.
I think that you don't even need to do that. Like, you could just have him be like, because of a thing that he did, he's fucked this up. And so the thing that he did was trip the fire alarm, or trip the water thingy.
Yep.
Because the thing is, with Empire Records, they didn't have money, but they still had product. You gotta have one or the other.
Ah, that's true. Okay.
Because otherwise, then you really are fucked.
Yeah, it's still coming back from that.
You have a wear clothes sign.
Text adventure.
And heck, instead of AJ the artist, it's AJ the game designer.
Aww.
Still is fucking clueless.
Good luck, kid. Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of amazing. He was able to tell what was up with Luca. It's like, you know, like 1 second after he saw him, but a woman crying alone on a roof. Fucking
couldn't match that one. Girls are crazy, am I right? Can't trust them to show their emotions.
And I don't feel the name to explain my game to you, Warren.
But I will anyway. So the Cones of Dunshire are basically...
I'd totally play that game in a heartbeat.
We all would. Come on now.
But I'd play to win.
I'm sorry.
I would play just to have a bunch of cones.
It flashed in my mind Ben Wyatt's goddamn face. When he knows he's going to win that game. Yo, that look.
He played Settlers of Catan on his bachelor.
That seemed like a really nice night.
It did. Anyway, sorry. Again, that's another show.
I totally would invite Adam Scott to be a character in this.
Who would he be?
I'm almost imagining the Joe analog.
Yeah.
Based on age.
Yeah.
All right.
That or he's Fogax.
He's Fogax. Okay. Gotta be.
That's just as good.
That's too beautiful.
Oh man. And he has that beard that Amska occasionally grows. Like, not his like good beard, but his what are you trying to do, Adam? Beard. you know the one.
Alright. So my bro. Is that your story version?
Yeah.
Nice. Pip!
All right. Mine's super short, to be fair, because as ever, I haven't really thought it through. I have a concept.
Shock.
Wow. The game is supposed to be the random one, Pip.
Listen.
She says, totally throwing Pippin under the bus so no one knows that she did it too.
Shock me with that deviant behavior.
Deviant behavior. Go on.
This movie, right?
Yep.
Music is very deeply embedded. And the whole thing.
Yep.
You know, they're at a record store for one thing.
Yep.
And, you know, the soundtrack, is amazing. They've got great music. The Cranberries, Better Than Ezra, Coyote Shivers, I guess.
Yep.
and all that. And I'm thinking, what I'm thinking is, what if we go all in? For Empire Records, the musical.
Oh, god damn it.
Oh, no.
God damn it, Pip. Did you take yours?
No, I'm just horrified by Pippin, as usual.
I'm sorry. This is an amazing idea. It could be a jukebox musical.
Oh, my god. Okay, all right. Walk us through it.
I'm not sure I can, because again, as I mentioned, I have a concept. And I didn't think much further than that. But... can't you just see the ending number? The big final 11 o'clock number with Gina?
Yeah.
And, you know, AJ and Corey off to the side having their harmony going on.
AJ!
And off on the other side of the stage, there's Joe buying the store. And then it all coalesces into that quiet moment of dancing on the roof.
Okay.
You gotta damn the man.
All Okay, on the one hand, I wish I could be like, that'll never make a good musical, but Tim Minchin made a fantastic musical out of Groundhog's Day. Yeah, so we're going to move on. Oh my God, this final song. Anyway, okay, Pip.
Yes?
Nominally, what we do here, though, are story changes. Now, you've changed the genre. What does changing the genre add or subtract from the story we have now?
Ready. Musicals are their own art form. And they have their own rules, their own tropes. And what that can do is not necessarily change the plot or anything. Everything that happens still happens. But what can do is it can deepen character without necessarily having to spell things out. Because if there are musical motifs that keep repeating, that can cue the audience. That can cue the audience to underlining
teal
emotions.
Teal and burgundy and gray.
So if like Corey and AJ have these different motifs that are slowly becoming one coherent whole. Or, you know, everyone having like their own discord motifs that, you know, come together at the end. It could be really great. And Rachmaninoff just doesn't fit.
Also, and again, this goes back to the Tim Minchin's Groundhog's Day thing. I think that songs can help clarify themes.
That's basically all I had, you guys.
What is the theme of Empire Records?
Found family.
Pip.
We discussed this already.
Okay. Yeah, I know. I'm trying to drive you to something. Jesus Christ. Never fucking mind.
Listen, you asked a question, I gave an answer.
And, like, Deb would have her, like, it's none of your business, this song. Which is, you know, kind of the same as, like, you, Corey's I Want song.
What is, what is the I Want song? Is it Corey's? Yeah.
Probably. Or maybe it's Joe's, when no one's around. And then it cuts into I Want the Money. But yeah, that is, listen, my idea is amazing. I am shocked it hasn't already happened.
Pip. Give it time, Pippin.
Write the treatment. Hand it off to Bialystok.
Bialystok and
tweet Lin-Manuel.
And then watch that money flow in.
And the money kept flowing in.
Naturally with a 40% to No Story is Sacred.
Yeah.
I like how you say, yeah, that's binding. We have it recorded.
That's how this all works, right? Yeah, so that's me.
Cool.
It's
between you and me now, Al.
And I've got a thing.
Yeah. All right. Well, I got a thing too. So.
Well, I said I got a thing first. So, ha.
Well, I said it last. All right, you go. Paces at dawn.
All right, so I'm going to do something similar to Brent's. I'm going to go into the future, but it's is that your speeding up clock noise?
Just into the future.
Yeah, it sounds like the future to me.
Is there something wrong with Corey and AJ's kids?
There should be.
They grow up to be assholes or something. They probably do. No, this is going to be take place in the distant future.
Not too distant.
The distant future of 2015.
Oh, Jesus.
Better times. So better time.
Do we have flying cars yet?
You know it.
2015?
No, it's like right before that time when before records started coming back in.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Like, I don't actually have a date on that, you know, so don't quote me.
2015 is, that's fine.
Yeah, that's pretty good time for it. Not vinyl yet.
Yeah.
Also, it's 20 years after the original, so.
Oh, yeah. Oh, fuck, yeah.
No, it isn't. Back in life.
Aha! So, is 2015. Lucas is the manager of Empire Records. Is a store dying. Like, it has, like, on a normal day, you know how many customers they get? 2.
That's not sustainable.
No, it is not.
Okay, keep going.
Like, Lucas, he inherited the store from Joe, kinda.
Okay.
In a kind of Joe and Lucas kind of way of inheriting the store.
Where's Joe?
Ran off with Jane?
He's in that far...
Super dead.
He's in that far distant land of probably Connecticut now.
He actually went back to his job working for the FBI, solving cold cases.
Who's his actor is?
Yeah. It's not a cold case. What is it? It's a... Shit. Well, that's okay, because Lucas, in another life, went to join CSI Miami.
No.
Yeah.
So Empire Records is hanging on onto its last thread. Like, digital downloads are legal now. that first big hit was when iTunes became a thing.
Mm.
So, like, the store has been bleeding customers, like, for the past 10 years. And he is not making ends meet. But, and he's counting that money one night, and he says, like, I wonder if I can make it work this time. You know where he's going?
Atlantic City.
You know it. You know what he does in Atlantic City?
Fuck up.
Where's the money, Lucas?
It's in Atlantic City.
What's it doing in Atlantic City?
Recirculating.
Okay, so where does he go from there?
He has to tell his employees, like, all two of them, like, he's closing the store. I still haven't decided if they, like, pull a Saving the Empire out of their hat or what, but,
I know, it sounds like a goodbye.
A goodbye movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man.
You made this movie sad.
I made a sad movie. Well, you know what? You know what you need to do for a funeral? You need to get some mourners. He's calling up the old crew.
The gang back together. And they're going to hold a goddamn wake. Look
for the store.
The fun cut.
Oh, Jesus. They all start singing mournfully. Mon amour.
I'd pay money for that.
So he calls up AJ. He calls up Corey. They never actually got together. What a shock.
They didn't stay together.
Yeah. What a shock.
Yeah.
He calls up Mark and his husband and Walt, the pizza guy.
Of course.
You know, calling up Deb, Burka, the gang. And
Warren.
Warren.
Warren's still there.
Oh, yeah, he's not.
That or he's a successful businessman, one or the other.
And he has to call him up. He has to call up Joe and tell him what he did.
The entire movie is everyone going, have you told Joe yet?
Oh, yes.
To be fair, Lucas makes any decision and everyone's elected to tell Joe.
He's a bad at decision making.
Yeah.
How do you see it ending?
Well, it can either be, going out of clearance, going out of business, a banner is put up, and the shelves are emptied out by a respectable whole group of people, buying stuff. Or you can get a Hail Mary and, guys, their records are a thing again.
Taylor Swift is coming to the store.
T-Swift!
Swift! And at the end, the most has-been version of Rex Manning shows up. Like, Rex Manning?
Is it Rex Manning Day?
Or how about this? Like, Rex Manning, I just go by Richard Manning now. Like,
yeah.
We knew you were a dick.
Can I buy this record now? Oh, yeah, $10. Anyways, I'm seeing this as kind of a send-off, of
an era?
Yeah, because, like, a lot of those stores, closed down.
And it's sad that it happened.
And
don't be sad that it closed. Be happy that it existed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go. There's a nice little bow on it. And then at the end of the movie, Lucas hadn't called Joe, and he's like feeling shitty about it because Joe's kind of his dad. Let's be real. But you know who shows up? Joe.
Because everyone was posting about it on Facebook, and how was he not going to know about it?
How did you know? I
looked on the fucking internet.
I have this phone. It gives me status updates.
Corey created a hashtag.
Hashtag Lucas did it again.
Yeah.
I wasn't able to keep it alive, Joe. I wasn't expecting you to. I didn't give it to you for you to keep it. I just give it to you. Like, you know, or some, you know, some, you know, heartfelt hope message about, oh, you know, how he cared about, oh, Lucas and all that.
You know, some bullshit like that.
That can be filled in post. Okay.
Yeah.
That's
me.
Sweet little sad movie.
So that just leaves Kat.
That leaves me, and I'm going to go with the most obvious one that I'm surprised no one has chosen up to this point.
Musical.
Coffee shop. Nope.
Gonna make them totally gay.
So that's implying it wasn't already.
Wow, I am focusing on the relationship between Deb, Corey, and
Gina,
thank you. Yes. Deb is caught in a potential triangle situation. There's her shitty boyfriend person. We're going to ditch him early on. I mean, he's still there. He's like, oh, please be heterosexual with me some more. No, she says. Fuck that noise. You're a dick.
I don't know. He seems like the sort of sweet
he's
guy.
Clueless.
Like, once he figures out what's going on, he seems like he'd be supportive.
Well, here's the thing. I think that maybe the reason that she had the suicide attempt was that, aside from being fucking miserable, I don't want to call this an impetus, but what happened the night before is that her boyfriend did try to gently break up with her because he was pretty sure that she was in love with one of her coworkers. And strangely, he was like, you know, maybe I need to step aside. And she's like, what the shit is this? Totally is not yet ready to talk about her feelings or anything like that. And in her vast confusion and unhappiness from many other things, had this attempt. From there, we have her new day here is reevaluating the people around her with this, you know, revelatory sort of look to things. And we see the examination between her relationship with Corey and the relationship with Gina. She doesn't really have a relationship with Corey. So really it's about Gina. It's her and Gina. But maybe she's like, maybe it's Corey, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, big coming of age, except not, I don't want coming of age, because she's come of age. She's done with that now. Now this is more like the other coming of age, which is coming out of the closet of age. And, you know, we have discussions like, you know, it just because maybe she's in love with one of her coworkers doesn't mean that the time that she had with her boyfriend is meaningless. So, you know, of course, this isn't gay. This is bisexual.
Woo!
No invisible queers here. So, you know, yeah, there's this other stuff going on. And actually, I love the idea of like all the rest of the plot is still going on in the background. But that kind of thing can sort of fade away when you're really stuck with this sort of internal, oh shit, what's happening? By the end of the day, nobody's in love with anybody, but everyone's very supportive, found family, bisexuality. Mm. The end! Thank you.
Yeah.
I'll be here all week. Anyway, so that's mine.
All right.
Oh, okay.
Questions?
Not really.
Thank you.
I mean, pretty simple.
It's pretty straightforward, I gotta say.
To be fair, we don't know that isn't what Deb was thinking the whole time.
I know. That's what makes it so great.
We don't get all the details of their outside lives.
But don't you want to read that now? Or watch it? Pip? I'm not going to talk to the boys about this one. Pip, don't you want to watch it now?
I kind of want to read the fanfic.
Yes. Join me. You know it already exists, though. Anyway. Hey, that's all of us, yeah. Isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah.
Should we go and do we want to try for a game?
A game?
Ooh. All right, so what game are we going to play then, you guys?
We should play Explode All the Things.
Oh, that could be fun. We can ruin Kat's favorite thing.
Oh.
It's Explode All the Things is where we take a good plot or a good thing from when we take a good plot and make it bad. So we're gonna figure out, this is a great movie, what'll make it suck?
Oh.
And I'm gonna say, if we concentrate any more on Mark, Like, he's perfect as he is, but he's got these moments of, like, creep.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That fucking...
Does he?
He tries to... kiss a...
That girl doing the ballet.
Oh.
No, a different woman.
Oh, yeah. But is it... Oh, good. There's more than one woman he creeps out on. That's...
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know... And I feel like if you concentrate on any character too much, it ruins the balance. Like, I want to know what all of their lives are, but the balance that they've struck is pretty good. So if you concentrate too much on just one, it ruins the balance of everybody. And that's how you make this a bad movie.
Okay.
Okay.
Alex,
you next. Damn. I said it first.
I would say, to make it worse, I would say adding a kid. Not like Warren. He's like a teenager. He's a teenager who's going for, you know, teenage shit.
Okay.
I'm saying like a 10 years old or younger.
Whoa.
Yeah, like, who left this kid in this store?
Also, I love how Warren committed assault and robbery. And we're all like, yeah, Warren's fine. He's just going through some stuff. You could go, you go on.
Well, that's how the cast's treated.
Yeah.
Like, they rip into him for his music dates, but, you know.
That's fair.
I guess if you put a young child in there, all of a sudden there's, like, the little precocious element, and they're playing pranks, and it's really obnoxious.
Also, you can't swear in front of the kid.
Also, a lot of these are teenagers dealing with adulthood and the impendingness of adulthood, and a kid makes it weird.
Yeah. Quick aside that I forgot to mention, that's a bad thing in this movie. The movie does have a very bad homophobia moment.
Oh no, does it?
They're ripping on Rex Manning, and one of the things they use to rip on Rex Manning is, it's popular amongst old women and teenage boys. Like, and Lucas actually asks, do you know what the popularity of this song of Rex Manning and teenage homosexuality? That Lucas literally says that.
And there's also a don't drop the soap moment as well.
See, I think the don't drop the soap is more offensive, weirdly, than the other one.
No, but I know what Alex is meaning. It's the way Lucas said it.
Mm.
Yeah. It's in reference to the horribleness that is Rex Manning.
Yeah. Okay. Legit.
Like, it's used in comparison to...
Fair enough.
That's my other story fix.
Yeah.
All right, who's next?
Pip.
I already went, Cat.
Oh, did you? Shit.
It's Bren.
Okay, just off the top of my head. Corey goes through with it.
That might be the winner. I'm sorry, that's terrible.
Yeah, dude. What?
And it's just as unsatisfying as you might imagine.
That's,
he said explode it.
that's oh god. Yeah, we did say that was our fault.
Yep.
We brought this on ourselves.
Mic drop.
Oh god.
You only have yourselves to blame.
It's true, we did this.
Yep. We did this.
Can't save us here with a Marty. That's worse thing.
Oh god,
I believe in you.
I it's not as good. I was just gonna add a dog. You know, it's sort of my go-to. You know, next thing you know, he puts his paw over his nose whenever somebody does something embarrassing.
The dog lays a comforting paw on Lucas's shoulder.
On Lucas's knee. Oh, on his knee. I mean,
and he pees on Rex Manning's leg.
Yes, he does. The moment where we see the dog like go up and lift a leg, and we're all like, "Oh!" But that doesn't ruin it as much as Corey going through.
Yeah.
And it looks more intense, when he's holding up the point place as a sign of "I still trust you, Warren."
Oh,
it's okay, Warren. Yeah, no, like using a dog as an emotional crutch to let the audience know what they should be feeling. Bullshit.
Aww.
That's what I say.
But yeah, congrats, dude. You made it worse.
Yep, you win.
Huzzah.
Whatever award that might be.
I win the I'm a Terrible Person award.
The coveted.
Ugh.
Ha ha. So, on that note, Kat, do you want to take us out here?
You guys, you know what that means. It's time to head on home. And for our listeners, as always, if you have a story to submit, head on over to nostoryissacred.com/submission. Follow us on Twitter at nostoryissacred or send an email through contact@nostoryissacred.com. Your hosts have been Alex McDonald, Brendan McDonald, Pippin McDonald, and Catherine Creighton. Editing for this episode done by Brendan. Transcript done by Ashley DaCosta. Art by Jay Wolf. Show notes and transcript are available at nostoryissacred.com. Thanks for listening, everyone, and please rate, review, and subscribe to No Story is Sacred. You can also visit our Patreon page to support the show and get neat rewards at patreon.com/nostoryissacred. See you next time when it is December and time for Moss Chris, when we will be talking about the Chris Evans movie, Playing It Cool. Until then, where no story is sacred and any story can be changed. I'm Kat.
I'm Brendan.
I'm Pippin.
And I'm Alex.
And we're
No Story is Sacred.